My name is Ben Richardson. I'm a member of staff in the Department of Politics and International Studies at Warwick. My research interests are mainly on the political economy of food and agriculture. So I'm interested in reasons why people grow what they do, sell what they do, and eat what they do, and particularly the financial reasons for that. I suppose my reading of the Sustainable Development Goals is that they're a very powerful normative tool for defining and shaping what our understanding of development is, but my concern is that they have become divorced in a way from the social forces that are going to do things like hold governments to account to deliver these goals, and they're maybe more of a branding exercise now than a kind of meaningful development project. There's a difficult debate for me to get my head around about the extent to which we should expect corporations, because it is mainly corporations that are involved in this, to act as developmental agencies, that is to do things beyond the bottom line. I'm sure there's lots of heated discussions in these companies between people who are pushing and pulling in different directions about whether they should be pursuing pecuniary gain, you know, the profit motive, or whether they should be trying to make money in a particular kind of way that does things that are socially valuable. So when I talk about the branding of the Sustainable Development Goals, I think that they're very useful for companies who want to move in that direction, but a concern I have is that they might be used in a very superficial way and not in a way that instigates real meaningful change in the ethics and activities of these big companies. Well, I've got two books on sugar now, so I'm sort of ploughing a furrow there. And the first one was really about international trade and who sets the policies that define the terms of competition between different countries. And that's important because it shapes where sugar's produced and who benefits from that. In the second book, I looked a little bit more closely at the production of sugar, so moving beyond simply where sugar's grown and looking at who that affects depending on how it's produced. So in the second book, I found that in simple terms, what's happening in the global sugar industry is that there's more and more sugar being produced by fewer and fewer people. There's high levels of mechanization in the industry, which is creating levels of redundancy that are quite high in particular countries. And there's a significant need for land and for water, which creates conflicts with people who have other claims on that land and water and difficulties in reconciling those. So that was my focus on the production side. I also went a little bit further down the supply chain and looked at the consumption of sugar. And typically in the West, generally, we think of sugar consumption as being a problem related to many, many diseases, you know, from tooth decay to diabetes. But it's often not thought that this is a problem in poorer parts of the world. But in fact, it is. The levels of sugar consumption are rising right around the world. I call it a sort of mass sweetening of the world's diet. And so problems that sometimes thought to be the exclusive preserve of richer societies, that's no longer the case. So I kind of end up calling for concerted international action to try and make production fairer and to make consumption healthier. It's not the food necessarily that's the issue, but as I found out with relation to sugar, it's how it's produced and how it's traded and all these different institutional mechanisms around it. So, you know, it can look very different depending on where you are in the world. and who you are, in fact. But I've done some research on palm oil, just to give an example, and there's problems with palm oil production in Southeast Asia linked to deforestation and land rights again. And my research there looked at an attempt to kind of govern that at a distance. There's an initiative called the Round Table on Sustainable Palm Oil, which basically tries to make sure that the palm oil is produced in a sustainable way against a set of standards that have been drawn up by different stakeholders. And then when it's palm oil is sold to consumers in Europe ultimately and in North America and elsewhere, they can be assured that the palm oil is not linked to some of these problems. My findings on that were that the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, a little bit like the Sustainable Development Goals, has gone down a route of commercialization to a degree, and in trying to reconcile its attempts to appeal to both businesses and the profit motive and appeal to society and other kinds of goals, they've had to find a kind of happy medium. My perspective as a politics scholar is to, you know, see the glasses half empty and say, well, actually, instead of a happy medium, I would say, you know, it's an unhappy medium and there's maybe more that could be done. I think the benefit will be to come to see sustainable development not as an add-on to existing practices or ways of thinking, but something that should be integral to the way that society is organised and maybe the way we live our own lives as well. My own experience in talking and thinking about sustainable development is that it quickly becomes intensely personal, and you begin to reflect on your own practices, you know, whether you should take that flight across the sea to a different country. And I think that's a good thing, actually. I don't necessarily think that personal ethical reflection is something that we should discourage, and that kind of introspection. But equally, it's important not to just individualise some of the big questions around sustainable development, because they're ultimately political questions for me, and that requires engagement with a whole host of institutions and organisations. And I think being armed with information and a particular critical set of faculties would be really important for anybody who's trying to tackle some of, well, I would say the biggest issues facing humanity. I mean, I think it's tremendously disempowering to focus almost exclusively on global governance as the only site that really matters. Of course, lots of organisations that have an international remit are important, but in many cases they operate through national governments. And ultimately, I think it's the activities of individuals that they're trying to govern. So I think that it's important to be conscious of what's happening at a global level and what's happening at a remove from us as individuals. But I would always encourage people, whether you know you're a scholar or a student or a citizen, however you conceptualise yourself, to just think about what you can do. And I just refer back again to my work on sugar. I mean, when I look at this as a scholar, I see activities happening around the world that are so diverse, and people would never think that they are engaged in a kind of collective counter movement against some of the more rapacious practices of the industry, but they are. You know, whether it's campaigning for cleaner water in one country, or against the burning of sugarcane and air pollution in another, or working with a trade union in another again. I mean, there's so many different ways that people try and push back against policies that are clearly running counter to how they want to live their lives. So in a way, what could be more empowering for us to do is to identify them, celebrate them, and show people that they are part of something bigger. Just because they're not involved in UN discussions on climate change, it doesn't mean they're not making a considerable effort to improve the world. What I'm coming to more and more as a scholar now is trying to think of language that is useful to people in putting forward a set of claims and demands that things be done differently and they be judged according to a different metric, and we shouldn't all be beholden to something like the national interest or the profit motive or these kinds of imperatives that are so useful for people who want to dominate in one way or another. So for me, trying to find a language and promote its usage is one thing I'd really like. Again, I'll just give reference to something I've come across in relation to food, is the idea of food sovereignty. One thing that really struck me about this concept is the way that it allows people to claim a kind of control and ownership and autonomy of how the food is grown in their particular area. And there's many more ideas like this. So that for me is what I'd like to see change. I think a different language could allow a different kind of politics and a different kind of life ultimately.
This podcast was recorded by Iggy Warwick and edited by Anne de Melinite. Music by Bensound.